Good afternoon. It is a Thursday, almost the end of the week. Thursday, August the 3rd, 2017. 17 minutes past 12 o'clock, coming up on 18 minutes. And we've got a great show today, so I hope you stay tuned over the next 2 hours. Coming up in hour number two today, after 1 o'clock, we are going to have open phone line talk because we have not had a chance to do that much this week. And there is oh so much going on in the world, and we had a couple great conversations going on yesterday. So we wanted to open up the phone lines again and also do some trivia, give some passes away to the Ohio State Fair. So we will do that next hour. 1:15 to 2 o'clock, so stay tuned. But this hour, we have a favorite guest of mine to this program. This is either his third or fourth appearance. I believe it's his fourth. He really is in the radio world an icon, the father of conservative talk. He looked out into that world of music, and he said, "There shall be talk," and the talk became political. Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and people of that sort certainly took their start, took their lead from this man, one of the all-time great voices, personalities, and radio pioneers. It is always a great pleasure and profound like of mine to welcome to these microphones Barry Farber. Barry, how are you?
God, that was a wonderful, what a wonderful thing to be welcomed like that. I feel like I almost want to hang up. We can't go anywhere but down from there. You put me on a pinnacle way up there in the atmosphere, and I want you to know I appreciate it.
Well, and Barry, I can't prove this, but I did not write any of that down. That was all off the cuff.
Well, off the cuff and from the heart. That's what I like about it.
Well, you know, this is something interesting I don't think we've ever talked about, Barry. You know the people who do radio shows, who they write their introductions, they write their questions. I could never work like that. What do you think of that type of host?
Oh, I think there's got to be a special chamber in broadcast hell for people like that. The spontaneity is simply thrown away. You got to do it your way. It's got to be honest. It's got to be from the heart. It's got to be scripted only in your mind. You cannot. The public today is too sophisticated. You can't get away with being one of those broadcast phonies anymore. I could tell when you were given the weather report that you were an honest, upright broadcaster, and I salute you therefore.
Well, I certainly thank you, Barry. Who are some of your favorite broadcasters in the world of broadcasting?
Well, I may have to go back into history, and you and your listeners may not recognize the name. I had a marvelous, marvelous colleague on WR in New York named Gene Shepherd. Now, you know, we can compare conservative talk hosts, liberal talk hosts. We can't compare Gene Shepherd to anybody. He was unique. He was a radio original. He could sit there not just for an hour, for 5 hours, and just talk the way you and I like it. Now, hot off the griddle, unscripted, unprepared, only by his experience, his genius, he would strike that anvil and magic sparks would fly through the air, and I really miss him a lot. Tex McCrary, my first boss in broadcasting, was a big favorite for me even before I met him and went to work for him. Today, I love Sean Hannity, and I knew he was going to be a superstar because I had a speech when he worked for a station in Alabama, and Sean picked me up at the airport. We knew each other already. We had met in New York, and Sean was telling me as he was driving me in his pickup truck from the airport to where the speech was going to be, I knew right away he was going to go all the way because he defended us conservatives from the attackers who say we're generating racism and we want to, tear this down and tear that down. He said, "Barry, you know, I don't care how powerful a commercial radio talk host, conservative may be, he can do nothing, and he can't implant an instinct. He can only unleash what the listener knows in his heart is true. He said, look at it. Pretend somebody got all of us together. You, Rush Limbaugh, I, and we're going to do a campaign. Let's bring back slavery. How far do you think we'd get? That's not in the American heart. And that's what I admire about Donald Trump. What he is doing right now is what Americans recognize as what's been simmering and bubbling in their conscious mind and subconscious mind for a long time. And this man, Trump, puts words to it and then action behind the words. I am really looking forward to this Democratic attempt to destroy Trump. I'm warning them, they're going to be sorry. They are going to be sorry. The public, see, the objective, Scott, is to make the public think that Trump is corrupt and never accomplished anything. No word. You're not allowed to say anything positive. The stock market is soaring. Consumer confidence is soaring. Unemployment is tanking way down. So many good things are going on that the public is going to be very, very upset with any Democratic effort to erase Trump's accomplishments and make him look like a failure or an ordinary president who deserves replacement at this time. I am looking forward. I think the American population is going to see through the campaign to destroy Trump, and they're going to destroy the would-be destroyers. Now, that's a prediction. That's one of my death-defying predictions. I'll stand on that.
You know, Barry, here's what's interesting. When you sat down in the early days of your radio career and you said, I am going to be a conservative radio talk show host, and maybe you didn't even say that, maybe it just happened. But once you gave your opinion, here's what, this is what bugs me in the world of news. I don't mind opinion shows. Opinion shows are fine. There's room for every kind of show. But does the audience know when the person has went from a news story to their opinion? Did you ever give that any thought?
Yes, a lot of thought. First of all, you're absolutely right. You're almost, you deserve a genius medal for realizing that at no point when I started my first show that was really mine, I was on the air with other people. You know, I went on with my first boss, Tex McCrary, and I would be invited to be interviewed. But my first show that was really mine, the way your show is yours right now, was September the 18th, 1960. And I did not, I was fresh out of college, graduated in 1952. I guess I wasn't fresh out. This was 8 years later. I was in the Army after that. But I never thought I was a conservative. I was what I always was. I thought I was a liberal. In North Carolina, I was part of a wonderful movement that has not been recognized yet. We young white people in the South in the 50s and 60s, we deserve a lot more credit. We're not upset. I've never met a white Southern man who's upset by this, but we all agree. We were very important in the civil rights movement in ending racial injustice because we provided the climate. If we had not warmed up the ocean, then the real civil rights fish would never swim. They would never get out there. We made the we ridiculed our elders who wanted segregation and blacks and whites and nicks and countries going to hell. Look at, no, we ridiculed that. We made the climate just right. So I was against racial injustice. I was against all dictatorships because of when I was born. The dictatorships that I was able to fight were all communists. I was born too late to be an anti-Nazi on the air. And I stayed where I was. I still hate all dictators. I still hate and fight racial injustice. But the world moves so far left that they point the bony finger of indignation at me and call me a conservative. I'm what I was when I called myself a liberal in college in the late 40s and the early 50s and in the Army. You're absolutely right. And as far as the opinion is concerned, I just wish we could go back to my first day in journalism class at the University of North Carolina, where we were told that they would spring the length of their chain and sink their fangs into us if we dared try to pass off our opinion as news or to twist the news to fit our personal preferences, our personal politics. We thought that was the biggest no-no in the world. Now the mask is off. That's what everybody does. But at least we're honest about it. When you go on the air, Scott, you don't call yourself a newscaster. You're a talk host, right?
That's right.
You're entitled to an opinion. You're supposed to have one. If you didn't, you would be a pretty weak and unnecessary talk host. So hooray for opinion. But they put the Iron Curtain there. Doesn't give you the right knowingly to lie. I had a nice discussion on my show last night about whether or not, you know, Thomas Jefferson and the gang promised us a free press. They didn't promise us a fair press, but a free press, free to be unfair. And as a young conservative talk host in Arizona, I like him a lot. His name is Joshua Bernstein. And he said, you should not be allowed, opinion fine, but you should not be allowed to lie knowingly. Think about that. If we were to process legally indictment, prosecution against what a talk host said that we found disturbing, means nothing. But if the talk host who lies, and there's a lot of that going on and much, much more coming up, when that person knowingly lies, then the system has been ruptured. The system has been abused. And I personally would not only not protest, I would welcome a law banning from the air for a year, for a five-year sentence, for 10 years, or for life, if you can prove that somebody knowingly lied. Now, before the liberals get upset, I'll go to the ramparts with a broken bourbon bottle to defend this. That is a high bar. It's very hard to win a prosecution like that, very hard to prove that somebody is knowingly lying. I'm sure I've delivered in my 57 years on the air. I'm sure I've delivered a lot of bad stories, a lot of fake news. I've fallen for a lot of traps, I'm sure. What I like to say dismissively is, I know not what the truth might be. I tell the tale as 'twas told to me. If you maintain that position, that's fine. But when you knowingly lie, I don't think you deserve the protections that Thomas Jefferson and his crowd arranged for us. I think you are abusing it, and I would like to see sanctions taken against you if you knowingly lie. There'd be some interesting law cases coming up, wouldn't it?
It certainly would. And what I have found, you're exactly right. You cannot call yourself a newscaster when you do a talk show, because there's only so much newscasting you can do. Now, you could do a 3-minute newscast, but when you've got hours to fill, you're a talk show. But what I find peculiar is, We do everything here. This is not a straight political, not a straight entertainment show. Like Tuesday, I'll give you an example. We had the actor Orson Bean on. Now, that interview had nothing to do with politics. He might have said something political, but I don't remember it. It was about his career. Now, if I challenge him about his career, and I say, Orson, what's the worst thing you ever did? People don't say, well, you're anti-movie. But if I have a conservative on, or I have a liberal on, and I challenge them on their belief, then I'm the opposite. If I challenge you on what you say, then I must be a liberal. That's where I think the water's getting muddy.
By the way, I love Orson Bean. Are you aware that his daughter was married to Breitbart, you know, who died suddenly and mysteriously after a drink or two a couple of years ago? I'm glad they kept his name alive. Breitbart still operates as Breitbart, but he was Breitbart's father-in-law. And I hope he told you about how he started his career. He went into the owner of, I think, the Blue Angel nightclub, with names something like that, in Greenwich Village in New York City. And he said, look, I'd like to be on your entertainment bill. I'd like to entertain your guests. And if I'm good, you'll treat me. And he said, the boss wanted to be with one of these tough New York types, maybe a little bit like Trump. And he said, say something funny. And Orson Bean said, belly button.
He did tell
and
that.
And the guy laughed and put him on the ticket, put him on the bill. He helped entertain with a lot of other, and he became a man himself. I love Orson Bean. I salute you for having him on.
Yes, he did that. But the question is, Barry, why is that? If I challenge Orson Bean on his work, it doesn't mean that I dislike Orson Bean. But if I challenge, just for the sake of this conversation, Barry Farber on one of his beliefs, then I must be a liberal. I don't, if I didn't, let's put it this way. If I don't like the person and I don't like their beliefs, why would I even have them on?
Well, that is very interesting. And there's several schools of thought. What you're getting to is something that broadcast seminars, workshops constantly try to get to, but nobody's gotten to it more effectively than you did when you summed up the whole equation right there a few minutes ago. I'd say the whole thing depends on you personally. I don't get upset if somebody challenges my opinion, because I think each opinion is like an individual person. Or pretend that I'm the owner of a pet shop, and I got a lot of little barking dogs and cats running around in cages, and I think each idea that is brought up is like one of my pets. You may not want to buy that one. You may be mildly interested in this one. And you may fall in love with the ones in this cage over here. So I think you're merely attacking a liberal position. I don't know a conservative who doesn't have some liberal instincts or some liberal positions. So I would say, yeah, I mean, for instance, I have a very liberal outlook on medicine. I am ashamed that we are the only industrial nation that does not have universal health care for everybody. You go to Europe from top to bottom, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Germany, Holland, Belgium, every industrialized nation has universal health care and also higher education. I just want to see more of it privatized and not run by the government. America, by the way, I think we're one half step away from having what we used to call socialized medicine, and they've cleaned that up a little bit. Now they want to call it single payer. Single payer, your Canadian neighbors know very well what that amounts to. In some countries, it works well. In other countries, it's a disaster. I don't know how it would work here, but something's got to work here. You can't say you're part of civilization if people are too sick to work, too sick to go out and get wiped out financially. So, all right, I've been talking like a liberal now for about 48 seconds. That's like a little one of my pets. You may not like that one, or you may say, well, hooray, at least I like one of his pets. You can criticize. I don't recall ever doing anything about criticism except laughing. Hooray. And obviously, if I want to spring the length of my chin and sink my fangs into a public figure who I think is committing outrages, and there are many of them now, and most of them, not all, are Democrats, fine. I expect blowback. I don't expect them to bow down and say, oh, thank you, Mr. Farber, for your wisdom. I shall cleanse myself of my notions and sin no more. I don't expect that. I expect a load right back between my eyeballs as hard as they can throw. You've got the right idea. You've got the right idea. How do you handle those who don't like what you say?
You know, it never really bothers me, to be honest with you, because I come to this show with the premise I've never sat down with an agenda, no matter who it was. But because I really don't know how the conversation will go. So if somebody criticizes something I say, I just say, well, wait until next week and you'll hear the other side of the story and then you can criticize that. So it never really bothered me, but I don't quite understand why taking the opposite opinion means it's your belief. That to me is always puzzling.
Have you ever considered how much nicer it is when instead of feeling your instincts and then jabbing, poking, and throwing a hand grenade now and then, pretending to be even-handed. That, to me, I think you deserve 30 days in the electric chair. But what I always do is I put my opinions out there on the front porch where the goats can get it. I level with the audience. I am a crusty back conservative. Why? Because I've traveled a little bit, I've seen some things, I've been to some interesting countries and stayed for significant periods of time, I have concluded that what I believe is better for mankind than what my adversaries believe. Then I think you're home free before you start. You're not trying to put anything over on them. You're not trying to twist the news so they will automatically, the listeners will automatically convert at least slightly over to your side from where they were when they woke up that morning. You're not trying to get away with anything. You're absolutely honest, and I think that's the correct position. Certainly it's my position.
Barry, this is interesting. You mentioned health care there a little bit. Let's talk about that, because we have an executive who is a Republican, Donald Trump, in the executive office. We have a Congress that's Republican, and we have a Senate that is Republican. Last Thursday night, about 6.5 days ago, John McCain was the vote that could have sent it back to the Congress, a repeal of Obamacare, and he went thumbs down and voted against it. Why are the Republicans having so much trouble with health care?
Because of cowardice. We campaigned for 7 years on trashing Obamacare, repealing Obamacare, replacing Obamacare, because it was easy. You got a free pass politically. You could throw out your chest, brag about how brave you were, threaten the enemy with obliteration if only you'll vote for me and give me a chance, because they knew there was a president, Obama, who would veto. So it was cost-free for them to take that position, win friends, win votes, and not be responsible for anything. because Obama was going to veto any rejection of Obamacare. Now we have a president who's going to sign it, and all of a sudden, the senators and the congressmen are going to their home districts, and they're having town meetings, and there's always people at town meetings who sort of know a little bit more than their neighbors do. They're rehearsed, and they're effective, and they can scare the wits out of any politician when somebody stands up and attacks the candidate who's holding the town meeting, attacks him for his stance on health care, and then he gets applause. That legislator, particularly with the media, is so comfortable in the large intestine of the Democratic Party. They found a home. The media, they can conspire to make that poor congressman or senator think things have shifted. The sands of this issue, the sands have been altered. It's not the same turf anymore, and I'm liable to lose. That too many people are still too fond of Obamacare. The Obamacare, in the polling, if you believe the polls, and if you believe the polls, if you take the polls for granted at face value, you are truly a lost cause. You can't do that. They're going to lie just like politicians will lie to try to achieve a better outcome in their next campaign. But when you hear them with all that bluster, and they're going to repeal Obamacare, and they get their first chance, and they say, uh-oh, it's not the same America anymore, I might lose. Somebody might throw me out of my seat if I continue with this. So let's change the subject. Let's do something else. And we just missed it by one vote. And I am sorry for that. I am really sorry. By the way, you helped me discover another one of my liberal hang-ups. I cannot attack John McCain. Anybody who suffered what he suffered as a communist prisoner in Vietnam, he has a certain kind of immunity in my eyes and in my heart. I am not going to trash McCain, but I mean, people who feel like I do about the world are trashing him like mad. They're really angry, upset at that one vote. How can you ignore what he went through for freedom, at least the attempt to keep South Vietnam? By the way, this is an interesting thing, a little sidebar here. Everybody thinks we lost the Vietnam War. There were three Vietnam Wars. We won two of them. The Korean War, beginning in June 1950, was the Vietnam War. And the aggressor, the North Koreans, were bashed and smashed and pushed back to their own borders. Their aggression did not pay off. There was, while we were fighting in Vietnam, the British were consolidating their command of the nation that later became Malaysia, and we won that war. The communists tried to do the same thing in Malaysia that they did in Vietnam, but the British were smarter, and they've contained the communists. They overwhelmed them. Well, they overwhelmed the communists. They really did a good job. I hope we took some notes from the British handling, working with local leaders, showing the public what would happen if the communists took over. So we won the Korean War. The British won the war on the Malayan Peninsula for Malaysia, and we lost in Vietnam, largely because after the Tet Offensive, you know, the communists were about to give up. They lost the Tet Offensive. But the American media, led by the most credible man in America, I'm fumbling around for his name now. I'm not going to fumble anymore, but there was one great news leader. His name will occur to me 3 seconds after you and I hang up. And he interpreted the Tet Offensive as a big defeat for America and a great victory for communism. The communists couldn't believe their eyes. So all is not as bad as it looks. I wish we had not done what we did with health care. I wish McCain had voted the opposite way. But there's always tomorrow. There's tomorrow.
Cronkite was the newsman, wasn't he?
Pardon?
Was it Cronkite? Cronkite,
yes. Walter Cronkite. Yeah. Don't forget, at my age, somebody was introducing me at a talk not long ago, and he said, I'm not saying Farber's been around for a long time, but if you look at that portrait of the Last Supper, he's third from the right. Walter Cronkite, indeed. Yeah. Thank you, pal.
No problem. We're talking about communications here, Barry, and something that happened last week that was kind of fascinating, a first time in this generation, was Scaramucci, hired by the White House to be communications director, and he gives this interview to a reporter that is laced with profanity, and we think that President Trump fired him because of this. That's what we understand from the President Trump White House. What did you make of the whole Scaramucci 11 days as communications director in that interview?
In concept, when I first heard of him, I thought it was a good idea and he was going to be good medicine for the White House. But then I heard him interviewed. And I claim no supernatural powers. I'm not saying I'm a psychic, line up and give me $50 and I'll tell you what's going to happen to you. No, but I heard him interviewed. Obviously, he had just accepted that position. He was riding high. And I didn't like one note that he struck. He said, I'm a straight shooter. That's it. I'm a straight shooter. I'm from the South. It is perfectly all right to say he's a straight shooter. She is a straight shooter. They are straight shooters. But to say I'm a straight shooter, that does not play. I was on my guard. I thought he would last longer than this. But I think that what the White House objected to really was not the profanity. Nobody learned any words that were new. I think it was the fact that he betrayed himself as though he were Donald Trump, that the whole thing was about him and his role and how important he was. Sorry. When you're in the room with Donald Trump, there's only room for one star. Sorry, pal. I think that's what did it in.
What do you think is going to happen with President Trump over the next, let's say, year? Where do you think he's going to take us?
All right, I think there's a war now. The media is out to destroy him. The left is out to destroy him. The open border crowd is out to destroy him. The single payer medical crowd is out to destroy him. The only people on Trump's side are the people. That's all he's got. And there's now a war. Who will win? A public subjected to a lying mass media, or a president trying to defend himself and get the word out that he's been highly successful? He has been a highly successful president. Look at the economy. I can't imagine the media being successful, but they have been in keeping Trump's lamp unlit, in keeping praise for him very late, in keeping awareness of the good things he's accomplished. I don't see how they've done it, and I don't think they can do it much longer. You know, the stock market is way up there. You need binoculars to look up and see the bottom of the Dow right now. I heard somebody on one of the anti-Trump channels, and they're almost all, they're almost unanimous now, including even Fox. And somebody asked this anchor man, look, Donald Trump, look at the economy. Look how the Dow has gained since he became president. Look at the job. Doesn't Trump get credit, at least for that rise in the stock market? And you know what the anchor man said? He said, some. That grudgingly, they can't deny that this man has worked economic miracles. And he's just getting started. It's like they're making him race with 20-pound weights around each ankle. He can't, but he's still scoring these accomplishments. Imagine what he could do for America if they would let him alone and talk about tax reform, talk about immigration, talk about medical coverage. And that's the key, Scott. Will enough people say, hey, things are pretty good and they're getting better? I don't know. Why are they not telling us all these great things? It's a war. It's an auction for action. Who is going to win? The media, with their ability to stay silent about Trump's accomplishment, or the American people who say, things aren't too bad here. Look what's going on. I'm betting on the side of the people, but it may be because my emotions are so severely on their side that I can't change sides. I am on the side of the people who say that they can. The enemies of Trump can hide that fire for a little while, but what are they going to do with all that smoke? I think every single day Trump gains and his opponents lose. I think Trump's accomplishments are going to do to Trump's enemies what a blowtorch does to a cobweb. Bang, smash, not there anymore. I think that it's a race. Who is going to win? The media and the Democrats, with their absolute refusal to give Trump any credit, or the people who say, like being lied to. I think the media is playing a game here. I don't think we're getting the whole story. Again, I'm betting on that last crowd, not the first crowd.
You know, Barry, one of the things that has bothered me since November is that President Trump is the president, but it seems to me like people have lost the ability to make rational observations. And I really realized that last week with the whole Scaramucci thing, because when that interview came out, that profane-laced interview, I heard good-natured, moral people who just happened to be Republican, which is fine, just as people happen to be Democrat, defend that, but they only defended it because it was one of Trump's people. I wish everybody in some way could just take the blinders off for a minute and just look at it. Look at the good things, which you described. Look at the bad things. Don't pretend they're not there. And judge everything on a case-by-case basis. But people can't do that. It's I'm all in or I'm all out. And that's a problem.
You're absolutely right, and I agree with you. I'll march in that parade of yours, and I'll carry a sign. You're absolutely right to excuse that kind of profanity. By the way, the enemies they see a sword on the ground. Let's call that profanity. They pick up that sword. They didn't realize they were going to find one, and then they go after the enemy with that sword that they just found lying there. How dare. The adversaries of Trump are taking the position that nobody ever cussed before, and those who do deserve annihilation. I don't cuss. I just grew up in a Boy Scout way with a Boy Scout attitude, and I'm not ashamed of that at all. But I think what you pointed out is a sort of a low-grade sin. It's a sin. Nobody's going to get too excited about it, but I think you're absolutely right. Somebody who, if it were neutral, or better yet, if it were a Democrat, oh, they would go crazy about, look at this profanity-ridden piece of trash. But if he's a Republican, if he belongs to Trump, he gets a free pass. Wrong. Absolutely wrong. You're absolutely right. I hope you get rewarded for being right.
Well,
and shame on the Republicans and the conservatives who would attack you for not responding well to that kind of use of profanity. I don't like it. Wouldn't bother me. I would not turn against anybody who cussed a lot. We've learned that a lot of people we never knew were vulgarians. Turn out to be when the memoirs of those who knew them are written. But, you've actually met people who gave Scaramucci a pass because he was a Trump guy. That is shameful. On behalf of the Trump crowd, the crowd that admires Trump, I apologize on their behalf to you.
Well, I'll tell you something interesting. A guest we had on, and I'm sure you knew her well before she passed away, about a year ago. Phyllis Schlafly.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, she was first on my show in the early 1970s, and what a time we had together. I can hear her voice right now. A great lady. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, and we had her on this show a lot. We were at the convention with her last year in Cleveland about a month before she died. But what was interesting about Phyllis was, I was having a conversation with her on air one day, unplanned, like they all are, and I said, Phyllis, I said, what do you think about the Supreme Court ruling about campaign finance? And she was against it. She didn't like that all this money was being dumped in to political campaigns. And I said, Phyllis, in this particular election, and she'd already backed Donald Trump by that point, I said, in this particular election, that's Hillary Clinton's philosophy, not so much Donald Trump's. And Phyllis said, well, that's probably the only thing that I agree with her on. But she didn't have a problem saying she agreed with her. There are people today, and I'll still use Hillary because she's a big name in the Democratic Party, there are people who cannot say one nice thing about Hillary if they support Trump, and vice versa. They can't say one nice thing about Hillary if they support Trump. Both of these people at their core are grandparents. They are wives or husbands. They've went through good and bad times. They're people. This has got to stop, this big divide.
Like the cowardly congressman who attacked Obamacare knowing that Obama would veto any resolution to trash it. I feel it'd be very easy for me to agree with you, but as you were talking, Scott, truth be told, I was trying to think of a good thing to say about Hillary. The as yet unmentioned bad things are so towering that, okay, if she's a good grandmother, fine. But that doesn't give her a blue ribbon around her box of Cracker Jacks. I'm afraid I'm guilty of not being able to find. I'll admit, I can find virtue in a lot of people I disagree with politically.
I'll tell you something.
I haven't yet found that sweet, virtuous spot in the life, works, and career of Hillary Clinton.
Well, let me jump in, because let me tell you, we covered a lot of politics last year. We had a lot of people on. Now, conversely, during the election, I will tell you guest lists on both sides. We had on Madeleine Albright, Al Franken, Ted Strickland. We also had on Barry Farber, Phyllis Schlafly, Roger Stone. So we felt like we were being even-handed. But here's the thing. What I could say last year, I could say, boy, Donald, before either one of them ever got the job, and we didn't know who was going to get it, I could say, boy, Donald Trump has defeated 12 Republicans And he's a great campaigner. He's a great I can say that. No problem. I can look at Hillary and I can say, boy, Hillary Clinton can get on a debate stage as a woman and hold her own against a Bernie Sanders or a Donald Trump, and in most cases win those debates. I could say nice things about both of them. Most people can't, and that's what worries me.
Well, I wish I could be a role model of the kind of person you're looking for. Oh, I can praise Bernie Sanders sky high. Long before he became known, I noticed that here was a senator I'd never heard of who was an avowed socialist. So, you know, you're not pointing the bony finger of indignation and saying, you're a socialist. He is an avowed socialist. So I had him on just to see what it was like being an avowed socialist who succeeded in getting himself elected as a senator from one of our states. And it was a good interview. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed him. But he lost me forever when somebody during the campaign commented on the disaster of Venezuela, run by an avowed socialist, Maduro. And he snapped at the question and said, I'm not running for president of Venezuela. I'm running for president of the United States. Goodbye, Bernie. Goodbye. If you're an avowed socialist and you're asking for our vote, and we have a nation that is living your blueprint right here in our hemisphere, you owe us an explanation of why that disastrous socialism is what we should vote for here, even though it is murderously bad in Venezuela. So I'm sorry, I'm not your role model for finding all that great stuff in your political opponent. If I ever can qualify, if we ever have a lineup where I can praise the other side, I'll be there at inconvenient hours, and I'll be there with all kinds of good things to say about them. But at the moment, Scott, I'm afraid I'm not your role model. No, I'm not going to lie to you.
No. And that's why you're a good guest, and that's why you've been a good host for so long. Barry, next time we're going to have to do 2 hours because we never get it done in one. Our time is up here. But as I always say, you are always welcome here. You are one of my favorite guests, and my hat's off to you for believing what you believe, because that is important.
Next time I'm on, remind me to tell the most, remind me to tell the dirtiest joke that I will tell on the air.
I will do that. Barry,
all right, Scott.
Barry,
I've enjoyed it thoroughly. You've set about 21 fires in my head, and you've enriched me beyond my ability to compliment you. Knowledge is power, and you've made me stronger than when I got up this morning.
Hey, Barry, thank you. I never learned anything when I was talking. That's a good quote to always remember. Thank you, Barry.
Thank you, Scott.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Take care.
We'll be back in about 10 minutes.
Also, check us out by downloading the TuneIn app on your cell phone or favorite mobile device.